Hi, I'm Susie Larson. Here's the podcast for Live the Promise. Enjoy the conversation.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Live the Promise.
Good afternoon. Thanks so much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson, and this is Live the Promise, and we are here to help you engage in a strong and active walk of faith. Really glad you tuned in, and I hope you're having a great day today. Well, here's a question for you. I want an honest answer. Are you ready? Do you see a problem with cohabitating, with couples moving in together? Well, you know, most Bible-believing Christians believe it's not right, it's wrong. But unfortunately, many Bible-believing Christians still do it. You know, it should be enough that our Father in Heaven tells us it's wrong, that it's not good for us. But even so, even with faith aside, would you believe that there is scientific evidence to prove how detrimental to your health, identity, to your vocation, to your relationships, to choose cohabitation instead of marriage? Well, we're going to explore that topic today, and what you're about to learn just might surprise you. Really glad to welcome back our friend Glenn Stanton. He's been on the show before. Always such a thoughtful conversation. Let me tell you about him. We'll get him on the show. Glenn Stanton is a director of For Family Formation Studies at Focus on the Family in Colorado Springs. He debates and lectures around the country on the issues of gender, sexuality, marriage, and parenting. He served the George W. Bush administration for many years as a consultant on increasing fatherhood involvement in the Head Start program. He and his wife live in Colorado Springs. You can find his influencer page on the web at myfaithradio.com. Glenn, I got to tell you, it's been way too long. Way too long.
Any period of time that I don't talk with you is way too long.
Wow,
seriously, I love to be with
thing.
You.
I mean, I totally teed you up to compliment me, but that was so amazing. So, no, truly, so good to have you on the show. And Glenn, you know this, you've been on enough times. We love to start out talking scripture, and it can be connected to the content or just in your personal walk of faith. Is there a verse you've been thinking about these days?
You know, I mean, that's a good question. You know, one that is particular to what we're going to talk about today, and that is found in Genesis 2, verse 24, where God is telling us, in fact, Jesus talks about it in Matthew 19 as well, but therefore a man shall leave his mother and father and cleave to his wife, and the two become one flesh. I mean, just that wonderful imagery, but it's more than imagery of what marriage is, that we forsake all other relationships. And that's important there, is it's not just leaving mother and father, but in that context, if you leave mother and father, you leave everybody else as well and cleave to your wife, and the wife cleaves to you, and you are one flesh. What a beautiful picture that God gives us about what marriage is and what his ideal is. Mm.
You know, Glenn, I just thought of our next conversation on another show, but we should talk about raising kids to leave and cleave. You know, having raised three boys, I always had that in my head that if I do my job right and I have a successful launch, you will cleave to your wife and she'll become your priority. But I still wasn't even fully prepared for how that would feel, being kind of the center stage of their life and then, you know, being someone who's got a bit part in their life. But it's awesome and it's right. But maybe another day, let's talk about that one, huh?
Yeah.
All right.
Sure.
Okay. So give me some background on just what inspired this book, The Ring Makes All the Difference, The Hidden Consequences of Cohabitation and the Strong Benefits of Marriage.
Well, I'm, you know, a bit of a research nerd in that I like to just hunker down in my office and I read lots and lots and lots of research, secular research, mainstream research on, you know, different parts of the family. And over the last 15 years, even 20 years, I've been reading, you know, nearly all the secular sociological research on cohabitation. And there's so many young people today and so many adults who think, well, cohabitation is a good idea, that you can road test the marriage and things like that. But There is no research whatsoever that says, one, that cohabiting before marriage is going to increase your likelihood of a successful marriage. And two, there really is no research that says that cohabiting before marriage increases any measure of well-being, either personally or for your relationship. And so, Susie, I mean, that's a huge story that needs to be told because people don't know it.
This is what's so amazing about this book. I feel like your book is for leaders and for experts, but it's for your everyday layperson who wants some tangible evidence so that they can have a part in the conversation, because we've made so light of the covenant of marriage, even among Christians. Yeah. I mean, I talk to these different leaders who say, I will have worship leaders on the stage leading, you know, their college age, you know, friends in worship, worshiping their faces off, and then going and sleeping with their girlfriend and thinking nothing of it. I mean, how did we get here?
Well, we got here, one, because we don't know our theology. And in fact, sometimes you'll hear people, they think they do know their theology, and they'll give you a theological explanation for why that's just perfectly fine. Mm. But we do not have, not just we don't know our theology, but the church really doesn't have a theology of sexuality and a theology of marriage. That is, you know, more than just Bible verses or proof texts. It's what is sexuality, and how does it reflect the very nature and image of God in us as human beings? And how does marriage reflect God's nature in the world and who we are? And even what the whole story is going to. I mean, Scripture starts with a marriage, and then it ends with a very different kind of marriage, the great wedding feast of the Lamb. That's what the whole gospel, that's what the whole storyline of what God has been doing since the beginning of creation. It's moving toward that great wedding feast where we, the bride of Christ, will be wedded to him, and that will be a wonderful and glorious day, not just for us, but for him, because that's what his heart has been moving toward through eternity.
Wow. And as long as we see not only this faith walk, but the idea of marriage as a should do or an ought to, we miss the whole beauty of the get to. You know, if it's just something that's just a harsh rule that old-fashioned people abide by, we don't see the wonder and the beauty. And we're going to get into just the stats that you've uncovered, that the benefits of marriage. In fact, you're better to not marry and not live together than you are to do anything else. So let's start with this one. You said, this is fascinating. You said, while more couples are choosing to cohabit, they're not deciding to cohabitate. That's interesting. So they're choosing to, but they're not deciding to. What do you mean?
Yeah, that's a big, big distinction, and a wonderful psychologist actually up the road from us in Colorado Springs here at the University of Denver is Scott Stanley. He and his colleagues are some of the brightest and best researchers on the issue of cohabitation in the world, and he is a good evangelical but working in the secular world. He has this phrase, sliding versus deciding. He says nobody sets out and sets a date. Okay, you know, get out your date book. I'll get out my date book. Let's plan on moving in together next August. Is the 5th good for you? It happens of like, okay, first a toothbrush moves in, then an extra pair change of clothes moves in, and then, you know, you're living over there, you know, two nights, three nights, four nights, and you go back to your apartment. And after a while, the couple just says, you know what, why don't we just cut the lease over on my other place and I'll just move in with you. The reason that that matters is it's what they call Stanley and his folks, what they call a lower level or a lower tier kind of relationship. Marriage is a relationship that you plan, you prepare for. You know, you're sending out invitations, everybody's getting ready. You rent the hall, you reserve the church, you know, mother-in-law gets her dress, you know, father-in-law, he puts the money down for the reception hall. I mean, everybody is moving toward that, and it's a very intentional kind of thing. Cohabitation is not that way. It just often happens.
You know, some think it's smart to maybe test drive their marriage before they actually own that thing. You've realized and found that that's not the wisest course. Say more.
Well, and that's a huge thing because the research, I mean, there is countless research studies that show that very thing, that no, it's not only not a good thing, it's actually a very bad thing to move in together before you marry, specifically thinking that it's going to enhance a future marriage. But I have so many young people say, you know what, you don't buy a car first without trying it. You don't buy a computer without trying it. And why would you enter a marriage without trying it? And I will respond, well, those others are consumer products. Are you saying that your beloved is a consumer product that you want to just take it out for a drive and really tell them, you know what, I'm not really ready to commit to you, but I just kind of want to see how you feel, see if you might be right for me. And, you know, especially ladies, I mean, does that just knock you
just
off your feet?
Makes
you
off my
swoon.
Feet.
Exactly.
I can't wait to introduce you to daddy.
Well, and that's the big, big thing. And that's the difference between cohabitation, the practical difference between cohabitation and marriage, is you are going into the cohabitation relationship holding a lot of things back.
So
in marriage,
Go ahead.
Yeah, in marriage, it's you're putting everything on the line, and you know you are in it for the long haul, and therefore you're able to give yourself to each other without reserve. But in cohabitation, you are keeping a number of things back, and that changes the nature of the relationship, how you negotiate with each other, how you interact with each other, and the sense of security that you yourselves feel in the relationship.
So interesting. Another thing I thought was great that you identified is that women and men view cohabitation differently. Speak to the differences in, of the way that a woman shows up with this arrangement in a man.
Yeah, see, and this is very, very key. And in chapter 7 in the book, I go into that in great detail. And I think it's interesting that not many people have really put that together, although a lot of the secular researchers have put the parts together. But one very interesting study was done up in Ohio at one of the universities there with these academics that are studying the impact of cohabitation. What they did was they took cohabiting couples. They broke all the men up into one room. They took the women all into the other room, and they asked them about their future in cohabitation. Where do you think the relationship is going? And what they found out, and it's not going to be a surprise to many of us, in fact, you know, our grandmas and grandpas who are listening, is one group said, you know what, we're just hanging out, having fun, you know, just kind of living life together and see where it goes. There's another group who said, oh, you know, we're on the road to marriage. We're thinking about it. We talk about it every once in a while. And, you know, I think that's where we're moving toward. Well, what you have there, I mean, if you can guess, you know, which one were the men, which one were the women, it's exactly what you would assume that it is. But here's the deal. It is the men were getting what they wanted, and they were just happy to be hanging out. The women thought the relationship was going somewhere, and for the guy's point of view, it was going nowhere. So the women are holding out a false hope that they think this relationship is moving where they want it to move, to marriage, but the guy just has no interest in that whatsoever.
And why would he?
That is harmful to women. Well, that's exactly right. I mean, you know, the big thing that we hear is he's got access to, you know, regular and reliable sex. But the other is he's got somebody to wash his clothes and cook his food for him.
You're right. Women are more likely to see their cohabitating relationships as a conveyor belt, eventually leading to marriage. Guys are more likely to see their cohabitating relationship as the opportunity to see each other more often, have fun together, make sure he feels taken care of, and to gain access to more regular sex. Something's wrong with this picture. Talking to Glenn Stanton, we've got 5 copies of The Ring Makes All the Difference. You got some questions, you sure can call in. Feel free to make it anonymous if you need to for any reason. 877-933-2484. 877-93-FAITH. That's a toll-free call. Or email Susie@myfaithradio.com. More with Glenn Stanton when we return.
Listening to an encore presentation of Live the Promise.
Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise, talking to our friend Glenn Stanton with Focus on the Family, title of his book, The ring makes all the difference. The hidden consequences of cohabitation and the strong benefits of marriage. Glenn, you touched on this before the break, but I'd love for you to expand on it a bit more. You write that cohabitation is marriage on man's terms. Maybe say more about that.
Yeah, and I mean, it's a tight little phrase, but it's so important. Cohabitation is the relationship on the man's terms, and marriage is the relationship on the woman's terms. And what I mean by that is men are, you know, generally more inclined to be comfortable with things with less commitment. And that's exactly what cohabitation is. Women want that commitment. They need that commitment and that protection within the commitment. So you think about this, in the cohabiting relationship versus the marriage relationship, a wife is a much more powerful and influential player in the relationship than a live-in girlfriend is. You think about that. I mean, you know, husbands, I like to say it this way. If you want to see who's in charge of the family, and of course we as Christians, you know what, the husband is the head of the household. He's the one that has the final say. But for many of us, even while that is true, you know what, we do what our wives tell us to do. We listen to them. And the way I explain that is, okay, what do you guys do on Saturday? And who determines what you're going to do on Saturday? If it's, you know, the guy, he's going to go off and play golf, he's going to go off, do this and that. But typically most good husbands is, you know what, honey, I'm thinking about this, but you have the final word on what I'm going to do on Saturday. And what is that? Wives have that influence. They have that power, if you will. And it's been that way ever since the beginning of time. But cohabiting women do not have that power. The guy will go, you know what? You're not my wife. You don't have control over me. I'm going to go off and do what I want to do. That frustrates the woman. It makes the woman feel like, you know, kind of a nobody in the relationship. And it actually requires that both husband, or not husband and wife, but man and woman in the cohabiting relationship learn to be a bit more manipulative with one another, because they have to sort of, you know, work and trick to get what they want, rather than just saying, hey, you know what, I'm your husband, I'm your wife, this is, you know, what I want, and this is what I request.
So this is a deeper life question for you, Glenn. But you think about cohabitating is quote-unquote marriage on a man's terms, and you're listening, you know, I'm listening to what you're saying here about the benefits, so to speak, that he's realizing as he's living with this gal, where it's so much more commitment and sacrifice. From a spiritual perspective, the only way we can grow to become more like Christ, both men and women, is when we're given those opportunities to die to our flesh, to ourself, our rights, so to speak, so that we can live more fully for somebody else. I want you to make the case, because if a man's listening going, and this is exactly, you've made my case for me, why I want to live with my girlfriend versus marry her, because it just sounds like all sacrifice. But there's things he cannot gain without entering into the marriage covenant.
Well, that's exactly right. And there's wonderful research showing that men who do get married become better men. They are more polite. They work harder. They earn more money. They're more respected in the community. They're more likely to stay employed. They're just more acculturated, if you will. They're involved in things in the community and stuff like that. And cohabitation actually makes men worse, because it basically says, you know what, this is the relationship on your terms. It gives you everything you need, and it doesn't require anything of you. Whenever we're in a situation and things are not demanded of us, you know, when things, we don't face challenges and things like that, we are weaker people for it. And cohabitation doesn't require anything of us, but marriage does, and that's why it's a better deal both for the men and the women.
Excellent. Karen's checking in from Duluth. She's got a question for you today. Hey, Karen, how are you?
Hey, great. Hope you are too. Mm-hmm. Such an interesting topic, and I was just preaching about this even Sunday, but what I'm noticing is that we have many people that come to the church, and they say that they are engaged. You know, this is my fiance, like 15 years. They've been engaged. Hello, they're living together, and you know, give us some ideas. I mean, when the people really commit themselves to Christ, and we say, listen, you just, you know, you can't keep doing this. But a friend gave me some insight into this. I thought, well, why would a woman just continue to do that? And she said, well, maybe he's the only person that ever asked her to get married. Would you comment on that, please?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, it's, and we all kind of laugh at, you know, the 15-year engagement. You know what, sister? That's not an engagement, honey.
Right.
You know, right? Somebody's pulling your leg here. And it is kind of that issue that when you break those things down kind of psychologically, it's typically not the woman who's like, you know what, I'm not quite ready. She is waiting, you know, she is waiting for that wedding ring to get on her finger. It's the guy who's dragging his feet, and he has no real motivation in and of himself necessarily to get to the big question. It's interesting. There's a secular book on, you know, how to make cohabitation work and how to negotiate all the terms. But this secular writer, she has a question, or she has a chapter in there. It says getting to the big question. And I don't know what that was, but when I started reading the chapter, I'm like, I bet I know what that big question is. And it's the marriage question. But what is interesting, Susie, is the chapter was written to the woman, how to get the cohabiting relationship to the point of marriage. Curiously, she didn't write it to the man. And I don't think she even realized it herself. But men don't say, you know what, I want to get married, but my wife, you know, my girlfriend, she's just not interested. It's the woman that is desiring that. And so women, and it's interesting, in that same chapter, she talks about this one woman who lays down the ultimatum. We know what the ultimatum in that sense is, you know what, I want to get married. If I'm not married in 6 months, I'm moving out and you're on your own. But she called it the ultimatum 2.0. And she was talking about this woman, and this woman, her boyfriend asked her to move in, and she said, I would love to move in with you. I would like nothing better. But here's what needs to happen. You need to get me a little piece of jewelry. And you need to ask me a very specific question, and then you need to go talk to my dad and ask him about me moving in with you. And then we're going to have a big party, and there's going to be a cake, there's going to be a wonderful dress, all of our friends are going to be there, we're going to exchange vows in front of a clergy. And, you know, it's a joke, but the author says that woman's married today because the guy went for it. She laid down the terms, and he said, you know what, if that's what it's going to take to move in with you and live with you, yes, I will do the whole marriage thing first. She got what she wanted, and that's the power of a woman.
Wow. You know, someone once said, you know, we teach people how to treat us based on what we tolerate. I've heard numerous people say that in different forms. But the thing is, it's like what we tolerate, what we put up with, where we draw the line, that not only impacts ourselves, it impacts the people that we're in relationship with. We're about ready to go to a break. But let's say you and I are in that kind of a relationship, and I draw the line to say, you know what? No. That challenge to you, Glenn, then forces you then. It throws you a curveball to the point where you suddenly have to respond differently and decide what you want to do with your story. So how we respond and what we put up with in our own lives also impacts the people we're related to. I know that seems obvious, but I think we forget that sometime, you know?
That's exactly right.
Mm. Talking to Glenn Stanton today, title of his book is The Ring Makes All the Difference, The Hidden Consequences of Cohabitation and the Strong Benefits of Marriage. Would you believe that a man with a ring will spend up to 8 more hours doing household chores, 8 more hours a week doing household chores? Amazing. We're going to talk more about the benefits of marriage, the consequences of cohabitation. Here's the number if you want to chime in, ask a question, 877-93-FAITH, 877-933-2484. Back in a minute.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Live the Promise. You're listening to an encore presentation of Live the Promise.
Even darkness is a light, the lowest place to the highest praise you are worth.
You know, if you don't know how good the Father is, and if you maybe have met a prickly Christian and you're not a believer yourself, you think of the word sin as something as, you know, as God is this cosmic killjoy in the sky and he's got his fist ready and he wants to pounce on you. But the truth of the matter is he's a good father, and the things that are deemed sinful are because they're bad for us. Today we're talking about cohabitation, and there's, apart from faith, scientific proof that it is just bad for us. So even people who do not subscribe to our faith, who studied this issue, have found it's bad for our relationships, for our health. So honored to have expert Glenn Stanton on the line with us today from Focus on the Family. He's written just a well-researched book, such a good book, The Ring Makes All the Difference, The Hidden Consequences of Cohabitation and the Strong Benefits of Marriage. We've got a few copies, love to get into your hands. If you want to chime into the conversation, maybe something you've learned, got a question for Glenn today, 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH. We've got Caroline checking in from Minneapolis, Minnesota. Hey, Caroline, how are you today?
I'm great. Thank you. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, I've been dating a fellow and we're very much in love, but we're contemplating moving in together, and I would rather not move in together because I think it's a dead end. I would rather get married, but he seems to be extremely protective of his money based on bad experience from his past marriage. And I'm wondering how Glenn feels about prenuptial agreements.
Yeah, and Caroline, man, that's a great, great question. And, you know, what I would encourage you, and if I could, I mean, you know, imagine me as a friend coming up, you know, right next to you and just saying, okay, read the tea leaves here. He is saying, you know what, I am reticent to give myself to you, my money, you know, my confidence, my trust, and that is just not a good foundation for a relationship. In fact, that's why marriage is so good, because it basically just says, you know what, I am giving you everything. Everything I have, I give to you, and you to him, and everybody is on the same page there. But any relationship that you enter into that has such a serious commitment in terms of blending your lives together, but then you're going to negotiate, okay, I'm going to hold this back and you can hold that back, is just a recipe for really failure and a lot of heartache and a lot of pain. And that's what, you know, it's not just the preachers and the moralists that are saying cohabitation is not a good idea. It's, you know, the secular researchers who just have no interest in, you know, morality itself. So, you know, as your friend coming up beside you, Carolyn, it would be like, you know, look at the warning lights here. You want to get married. He just wants you to come in and to be his partner and to be there for him, but he doesn't want to give everything to you. And so in that sense, and it's what I was talking about earlier, cohabitation can tend to be the relationship on the man's terms. It marriages the relationships on the woman's terms. The woman is typically the one compromising her power and her influence and her position in the relationship through cohabiting.
And Caroline, I mean, to love your story, I pray that you love your story enough and value yourself enough to say, you know, I'm worth more than that. And wouldn't you say, Glenn, that there are probably some really good guys who are proposing to move in because they'll take what they can get, where if a woman draws a line and says, you know, this far, no more, that would be enough for that good guy to say, you know, you're right, let's get married. And they end up being good husbands, right? I mean, it's... Are they all
absolutely
slouches?
No. And that's actually how marriage has been working for the last, you know, 3,000 years, is the guy has to step up and say, you know what, if I want her, if I want access to her, not just sexually, but domestically and emotionally, I've got to play by her rules and the marriage rules. And ladies, you would be so surprised if you said, you know what, I'd love to move in with you, but I need a wedding ring first. I need a wedding. I need all that stuff before we move in. And how that guy will say, you know what, I'm willing to do that.
Well, that's the big test. It says how they feel about you and what they're in it for, doesn't it? Because there's a fork in the road then for them.
And it is. And it's an issue, like you just said, Susie, it's an issue of just self-dignity for the woman, you know, to say that I am worth it. And I can, if you will, set the price for myself and what I have to offer. And it's going to be a high price. And that price is going to be marriage rather than just kind of bartering for anything that I can get.
We have to, as women, stop believing the lie that we have to settle. And I mean, we also believe a lie that we can paint a picture that you should fit in this perfect box, and that's another show. But I'm saying, so often we settle because we diminish our own value. Caroline, you're going to get a copy of Glenn's book, and I'm so grateful that you will. I pray you'll read it before you make any decisions. 877-933-2484. Please forgive my voice. I'm on the tail end of a cold here. I thought it was so interesting, Glenn, you wrote that cohabitating men, so men who are insist on living with their girlfriend. But if and when they do eventually get married, they end up actually being different kinds of husbands than they portrayed initially as boyfriends. Say more about that.
Yeah. It's interesting that the man who cohabits and then goes on to get married, those men are more likely to be unfaithful to their wife than a man who gets married who hasn't cohabited beforehand. So I like to say to women, if you are interested in having a man who's more likely to be unfaithful to you once you get married, then cohabitation is exactly what you're looking for, because it will produce that. See, because the man has learned that, well, I don't have to respect her so much. And we had this relationship before where she wasn't my wife, and I established the rules for how this was going to be, and he drags that, you know, kind of dangerous sort of philosophy and way of thinking into his relationship. Another thing for women interesting is we find out that men and women who cohabit are more likely to be poor even though both of them are working. And in fact, a cohabiting woman is more likely to have to be working outside the home in the workforce than a married couple. But curiously, the married couple, who only one of them is working, they're more likely to not be poor and be able to pay their bills and things like that. So we've got this curious thing where, ma'am, you are more likely to have to be working but still be poor at the same time. And the difference that makes is sort of what Carolyn had said. Cohabitors deal with their money differently than married couples do. They usually have two checking accounts. This is my money, this is your money, rather than let's put all our money together and let the power of it together make a better life for ourselves.
You know, I think in any facet of life, if you're playing not to lose, you're going to lose, right?
Yes, yes. And that is it. And that's the secular researchers will tell us this, that it's the lack of commitment that really does make cohabitation more troubling than it does marriage. The other is what they call the ambiguity of the relationship. And that is, for the woman, the relationship means one thing. For the man, the relationship means another. And whenever you've got some sort of relationship and neither are clear on what it means to the other person, then you've got problems. The way I like to illustrate this is, think about the young cohabiting couple, and you know, they're renting and they're throwing their money away on rent, and they want to buy a house and they don't have the money. So they'll ask one of the parents, and you know, he says, you know, could we ask your dad maybe for a small down payment loan? And so he goes and asks not his father-in-law, but his live-in girlfriend's dad, hey, could we have a loan to buy our first house? This guy is not married to his daughter. He's going to say, you know what, get out of here, forget it. But even if he's kind of a McGillicuddy or a dud, and you know, the father-in-law doesn't really care for him, the fact that he's married to his daughter, he's going to be more likely to give that money and to help them out, because he's committed to his daughter. They're together, and he wants to help his daughter by helping both of them. And see that? And so the ambiguity of the relationship, if you will, the cohabiting relationship, works itself out in a zillion different ways, even with the in-laws, which undercuts the nature and health of the relationship itself.
Well, that was going to be my next question, Glenn. And what other ways do you see this ripple effect into these extended relationships when the cohabiting couple versus the married couple?
Well, you made reference right before we went to the break a little bit earlier, and this is a fascinating thing, is that in terms of just housework and sharing the housework, we would tend to think, well, the husband is the one who wouldn't, you know, help out, you know, use a vacuum cleaner, a toilet brush, or a dust mop, things like that, because he's the man of the house, whereas a cohabiting couple would be more likely to share the duties. Absolutely the exact opposite. Cohabiting men are not likely to help out with the household chores. A married man, the research finds out, is more likely to help with the chores an additional 8 hours a week than a cohabiting man. So a married man with a ring on his finger is going to be more acquainted with the washcloth at the sink, the mop, the vacuum cleaner, the toilet brush, those kinds of things. And he does again, because the wife asks him to, and as a husband, he has the motivation and the encouragement to try to keep peace and also to try to help out and contribute to the home that he's a part of. So husbands are better men and more helpful and loving and caring men, less likely to be unfaithful, to cheat, to go out drinking, to be carousing, things like that, than men who are cohabiting.
Well, you know,
ladies, I mean, if you want a good man, you want a married man. If you want a guy who looks out for himself, then cohabit with him, and that's what he'll continue
to
do.
You want a married man who's married to you, not married to someone else.
Right, exactly.
Just a little distinction there. No, but when you think about it, I mean, when, from that perspective, cohabiting is a selfish decision then, truly, because it's like, well, then I'm just, you know, I mean, at least, I mean, it just is. It's a shortcut.
Well, by definition, it is. Exactly. Yeah. It's you know what? I love you. I want to move in with you. I want my life with you. But I'm going to keep this over on my side of the line. Hmm. I mean, that's what cohabitation is by definition. It's holding back on the relationship. And that's no good foundation to build a relationship on.
Wow. Another interesting point in the book is you say that modern feminism has failed women. Now, I think I know the answer to this to some degree, but I'd much rather hear it from an expert. I want to hear your perspective. How has modern feminism failed us?
Well, see, and that's the big, big thing, because I mean, modern feminism, you know, first of all, it said, let's be sexual beings on the man's terms. We can be as aggressive as they are. We cannot care about, you know, commitment and connection in sex. And it has hurt women deeply because of how they are. They're more emotionally connected. They want to be connected, and they can't deal with just, you know, kind of cheap sex. The same with is with abortion. I mean, abortion for many of the radical feminists, you know, has become a sacrament to them, but it has not made women better because, as has been said, you can scrape the baby out of the womb, but you can't scrape that baby out of the mother's heart. And they're suffering deeply. Now, this third thing is cohabitation. Let's not join ourselves ball and chain to a man. Let's just live with him. And if we don't like it, and if he doesn't treat us well, we can leave. Well, the exact opposite has been found. And these scholars have found out what they call is the relational vortex, that when a woman moves in with a man without marriage and it's a bad relationship, it's actually harder for her to leave that relationship, curiously, than a married woman leaving her relationship, because there's a legality around divorce, at least. You know, there are guidelines, if you will. But the woman who's cohabiting, who wants to leave, she can be emotionally manipulated. She can be controlled in that way. And they find that women are, it's easier for them to leave bad marriages, truly bad marriages, than it is to leave a bad, abusive, cohabiting relationship. So again, marriage serves women well. Marriage empowers women in the relationship. Cohabiting doesn't. So it produces the exact opposite of what feminists would desire, and that is a strong position for the woman, a healthy position for the woman. And again, Susie, study after study after study shows this to be the case over the last 20 years.
Another couple points on that. In, you know, the instance of abuse and infidelity are higher in cohabiting couples than in married couples.
Tremendously higher.
Unbelievable.
Exactly.
Unbelievable. We'll talk more about that when we return. We've got one more segment with Glenn Stanton, so another chance if you want to call in, get your questions answered. You can call in anonymously if you prefer. 877-933-2484. You can email me, Susie@myfaithradio.com. More with Glenn Stanton in a moment.
Listening to an encore presentation of Live the Promise.
I will sing about your love. I will shout it to the sky. I will tell them what you've done. When the people ask me why I live my life this way,
so glad you tuned in today. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise, talking to my friend Glenn Stanton from Focus on the Family. Title of his book, The Ring Makes All the Difference, and it really does. Subtitle, The Hidden Consequences of Cohabitation and the Strong Benefits of Marriage. Glenn, I'd love for you to speak to the issues of spousal abuse and infidelity. You say there's actually concrete research around these two issues for the cohabiting couple.
Well, and sadly, I mean, there's a good mountain of research on this. And again, it goes contrary to what the feminists believe. I mean, they believe that women do better in cohabitation. But women who are cohabiting are significantly more likely to suffer from physical, sexual, and emotional and verbal abuse by their partner. And curiously, less able to leave that relationship to go get safety. And that has to do a bit with just the psychology of cohabiting relationships. But again, a man who is just living with a woman is not as likely to care for her, to protect her, to watch out for her dignity. And a bit of that is because, and again, not to say that this is the woman's fault at all, but because she has already compromised in her own dignity, and that she doesn't demand of the man to be treated in that way. But the man also, and this is where the real responsibility lies, is he sees this woman in his life not as a wife, but as a commodity, if you will, in his life that he can do anything with. She is there for his pleasure and his enjoyment. The other, same with infidelity. Men who are cohabiting are much more likely to be unfaithful men. But what's curious is women who are cohabiting are far more likely to be unfaithful to their partner than wives are. What's interesting there is that the cohabiting woman is not so much going out looking for sex. She is going out and looking for intimacy, for someone to care for her, because her cohabiting boyfriend is not likely to care for her, to, you know, deny himself for her, to date her, if you will, and, you know, to bring her flowers and things like that. It's not like husbands do that all the time, but they're more likely to do that. So the woman is, the wife is significantly less likely to feel like she has to go out into the community to find that kind of love, to find that kind of attention from a guy. That's why she's more likely to be unfaithful within a cohabiting relationship.
So, Glenn, this is really why there's no such thing as a test run in marriage, because, you, like you say, the whole psychology of the relationship, it's apples and oranges, because you're starting in a whole different premise, basing it on a whole different set of rules. It's not even a true test run, is it?
It's not, and that's one thing that the scholars tell us, very interesting, is that cohabiting looks more like singleness in terms of the psychology of relationships than it does cohabitation looking like marriage. And you put it so well. I mean, they're whole different ball games, and it's a different ball game because the definition of cohabiting is, I want to move in with you. I want you to be my sexual partner. I want you to be my domestic partner, but I'm going to hold a good bit of stuff back. And again, I mean, who thinks that's a winning, you know, kind of situation? We want in our relationships to give everything to another. You think about in movies. I mean, I think about the movie Hitch, and, you know, whatever we think about that as, you know, kind of a good Christian movie, it wasn't necessarily, but at the end of the movie, the couple gets married. And as the credits are rolling, the music for the wedding is there, people are dancing, people are having a fun time. Never at the end of any movie does the couple, and we celebrate, oh my goodness, now they're moving in together.
Right.
You know, it's a marriage. And the people who make these movies know that it's the marriage that moves our heart. It's the marriage that creates a beautiful future and not the cohabitation.
Well, you're thinking about, no one sets out to say, I'm going to diminish my value by just giving you, you know, committing to part of this relationship. That sure speaks to why people slide into it and not decide into it. I have so many more questions and only a couple more minutes. This listener says, does the man end up resenting his wife if he reluctantly agrees to get married?
If, you know what, no. Because in a sense, I mean, a man is not going to get married if he doesn't want to. But if he has kind of a reticence about marriage, and if she is a relatively good wife or a good woman, and this has been happening for millennia, he learns to love his wife. And he learns that, you know what, I am a better man today because my wife demands that I go to work every day. She demands that I help out around the house.
That I change my T-shirt.
Exactly. I mean, it's interesting. I like to tell it this way. I mean, you know, you go up to Mile High Stadium right up the road here in Denver, and you fill that stadium with men and women that have been married 40 years or more. And you ask them, men, are you better men today because you are married? And Susie, what would happen is the place would erupt in laughter, not because it's a silly question, but because it's an obvious question. Mm. The men know that they are better men because they are married, and the women know that as well. Marriage is one of the ways that we socialize men. We get men to be responsible. We get them to grow up. We get them to put their hand to the plow, basically, and, you know, and keep working and provide for their family and be true and be diligent. And men who have done that know that they are a much better man at the end of their life than they would have been had they remained single or just simply cohabiting with somebody. Marriage makes better men out of men.
Marriage makes better men out of men. Just fascinating. What have you noticed the differences? I know that some would be obvious, but I'm wondering if there are a lot of differences here between a serial cohabitor and a guy who and a gal who move in several months before the wedding. What are the implications there?
You know what? That's an interesting one, because just based on the research, I mean, from a moral point of view, moving in before the wedding is not a good thing. But remember earlier I talked about the ambiguity of the relationship. Couples who move in before the wedding and after the engagement do not please God, but their relationships are not as problematic, because everybody knows what the nature of that relationship is. You know what? Mom's ordered her dress. Dad has put the down payment on. I mean, they are psychologically married, even if they're not morally married. But here's the problem with that. Some marriages don't happen. You know, the engagement breaks off. And so you
plus
could,
the compromise. I just have to jump in.
Well,
if
exactly.
I'm willing to compromise there, how else am I willing to compromise? And do I believe that the enemy is a legalist and he will look for access anyway? I mean, I just think we give him open doors. We can't minimize that.
You know? And that's exactly right. Mm-hmm. But the serial cohabitor, you are starting and ending a story with a new life partner, if you will, again and again and again. And it's the illustration that we've heard. You know, you apply tape and then pull it off, apply tape, pull it off. Soon that tape's going to just lose its stickiness. Mm. And that's the kind of mate you are going to be later on in life. And that's not a good, healthy thing, not for you or your prospective spouse.
Wow. So, so powerful. Okay. We've just got about a minute here before we pray, but I'd love for you to make the case that the marriage license is more than a formality, because you say there's a robust body of scientific evidence to say otherwise, where some, especially a lot of young people, I shouldn't even say young people, a lot of people who are delaying marriage are going, it's a mere formality. Explain that.
Well, and that's what they said in the 60s and 70s. Well, it's just a piece of paper. You know, but no, marriage is more than a piece of paper. Marriage, I mean, it's why we do it publicly. It's me and my spouse standing before a group of people saying, I'm all in. I give you everything. My spouse says that to me. And the witnesses around us hear that. And because we've done that, one, we can't deny it. No, I never said that. I never promised that. We have the community around us that can call us to accountability. And so, yes, a marriage license is not just a piece of paper. The marriage license is the activity that you engage in publicly to commit yourself to one another and clarify your relationship before your friends, family, and whole community. And that makes a world of different social sciences. Tell it again and again and again.
Wow, Glenn, this has been so fantastic, and I pray that you'll join us again. We have just such a short amount of time, and I've got the digital clock in front of me, that I'm going to pray for you and for Focus, because what you're doing is so incredibly important. Lord, I pray for Glenn, and I pray for the whole team at Focus. I pray you bless them, protect them, guide and direct them, establish them in your best purposes for them. Oh, Father, we pray that marriage and the family and the sanctity of life would make a massive comeback. We pray for a revival of faith in the body of Christ and in the world abroad. We thank you, Lord, in your name. Amen. Glenn,
Amen.
Please
Thank
come
you,
back.
Susie.
Let's do this again, okay?
I would love it.
God bless you. You've been listening to Live the Promise. I'm Susie Larson. In just a bit, you'll find a podcast of today's program on our website at myfaithradio.com. Remember this, The Lord wants you to last long and finish strong. He is the one who keeps you strong to the end. Have a great day. Thanks for listening to this conversation from Live the Promise. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend. Help grow the impact of the show. Also, if you would, take a moment to subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player, and then never miss a show.